Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Fred Angeli. This hour on the program, we're in a recession, obviously. The U.S. lost more jobs in 2008 than perhaps any year since World War II. Retail sales are down, consumers reducing spending, home prices are falling, Ohio's economy in serious trouble. Governor Strickland says we need a large infusion of federal money to avoid a possible 25% across-the-board cut in state expenditures. So how is our local economy doing here in the Columbus 8-county metro area? We'll hear an economic forecast. Joining us this hour, a panel of local economic experts, Bill Lafayette, Vice President for Economic Analysis for the Columbus Chamber of Commerce, is back with us. Bill, good to have you here.
Thanks, Fred.
Jim Newton, Chief Economic Advisor for Commerce National Bank. Jim, good to have you back as well.
Good to be back.
And joining us, Joe Mandeville, Assistant Vice President of the Red Capital Group here in Columbus. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And George Machen, Vice President and Senior Economist for Huntington Bank Shares Incorporated. George, good to have
you.
Good morning.
Thank
you. We're at 614-292-8513 for your phone calls. You can email brief comments or questions to openline at WOSU.org. So, City of Columbus closing 12 recreation facilities, apparently. They're talking about putting before the people a vote for an income tax increase. It's 2% now and likely to be more if voters voted in. So, neighborhood health center is being cut back, too, in terms of their services and hours. Bill Lafayette, this doesn't sound like a very good local economy.
No, it's not for Columbus proper. Columbus proper hasn't seen the rate of job increase that the rest of the metro has.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Columbus relies mostly on income taxes, payroll taxes. Mm-hmm. And when jobs are stable or declining, so are tax revenues.
All right. But you're saying the rest of the 8-county area outside Columbus has seen a net increase in jobs in 2008?
As far as we know now, yes. Mm-hmm. We should be up something like 0.7% for 2008, far, far better than the national average.
What can so suburban entities, townships, cities, et cetera, are doing a little better budget-wise then?
In some cases, yes.
Mm-hmm. In some cases, no, though. Huh?
In some cases, no.
Jim Newton?
Well, one thing I would say is, you know, we have to understand that all of this information that we get from the government is their best estimate. I've been following this throughout the year, and I'm really convinced that they are overestimating the amount of growth in the Columbus metropolitan area. Mm. I don't think it's nearly as good as that 0.7% would indicate. If you look at some of the areas outside of Columbus proper, they're not doing all that well. They're experiencing budgetary difficulties as well. I think shortly after these numbers come out, the revised numbers, which will come out within the next couple of months, I think we're going to find that 2008 wasn't really quite as good as we thought.
Mm-hmm. What kind of growth ideally would you like to see at a minimum?
Oh, I'd love to see, 3-4% growth in employment. You know, I think what we're likely to see is that 0.7% throttled back to probably somewhere around a quarter to a half a percentage point. Mm-hmm. I think we'll still see growth. We'll still find that Columbus did relatively well, but not as well as what we thought.
George, Joe, anything to add here?
I have a little bit more positive view. I agree that there are some statistical issues and we'll probably get some downward revisions. But still, if you're looking at the, for example, the year from November of last year to November of this year, employment's up 0.2% in Columbus, just comparing those 2 months. Mm-hmm. That's not super, but if you look at the nation, employment for that period dropped 1.35%. So even with some statistical issues, we have done considerably better than the national average. And I think that that is a reflection of some fundamental improvements in the Columbus economy over the last couple of years. We have been outperforming the nation.
Why is that true?
There are multiple reasons. A strong, diverse economy, an economy that also didn't experience some of the boom-bust behavior that a lot of the rest of the nation has experienced. A lot of the employment and economic growth and the nation overall in 2004 through 2006 was a function of the housing markets. Mm-hmm. That boom has gone into a bust, and especially in those states where the boom was the biggest, the bust is now the most significant. We don't have that. We're a little bit more like the along with Ohio, I would say, like the slow and steady turtle that didn't see the very strong growth earlier in the decade. But as a result, we don't have some of the excesses that some other areas of the country have.
Yeah, George, we're seeing we have these numbers, and they're very interesting. What does it translate down to for someone of medium skill level looking for a job in the Columbus area? I mean, does this mean that there are fewer entry-level jobs, fewer service jobs? I mean, how does this translate out?
Well, there's no question that we are in recession. The national economy is in recession. It's been in recession for an entire year. And I would foresee that for the first half of this year, the economy will continue to be in recession. So we're going to see some weakness in labor markets. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it. That's why we're showing I'm showing a decline overall, modest in this year from the strength that we've had previously. But I do think that once the national economy gets going, Columbus should be right in there and perhaps outperform the national economy in the recovery.
So somebody out looking for a job that's not necessarily minimum wage, but something that's entry level is service jobs, likely to have fewer choices. Is that what this means?
In the near term, probably it'll be a challenging market. Employment is a bit of a lagging indicator. Mm-hmm. It follows with a time lag what's been happening in GDP and mm-hmm. other aspects of the economy. But as a recovery starts forming, we'd probably see somewhat of a bottom in that. And then I would foresee that by the end of the year, that'll be a better environment than earlier in the year.
Joe Mandeville of the Red Capital Group, what would you have to add?
Yeah, I just want to go back real quick to something that George talked about with kind of the difference between the boom and bust cycles. I think two of the industries, particularly construction and finance, were industries that we did not overindulge in during the housing boom. And just a moment on finance, I think about 700 jobs were lost year over year in November in the finance industry in the Columbus MSA. So that brings us down to the employment levels of about 2,000. So mm-hmm. if you look at an eight-year period, we basically didn't create very many jobs in finance.
Finance includes the what? Banks?
Banks, insurance companies, mm-hmm. Real estate finance. And so basically what that means is that, over an eight-year period, we did not overindulge. So I think that we're not likely to see losses in finance to continue and perhaps even maybe some growth in the coming year.
Well, what is the unemployment rate here in the Columbus metro area?
6.1, I think.
6.1, the latest numbers. And now this is not a part of the chamber forecast, but we at Commerce National Bank are expecting that probably next year or this year in 2009. To increase relatively significantly, probably seeing an average for the year of better than 7%.
Yeah, and I think we've discussed in the past, Jim, that this unemployment figure is a bit deceptive in the sense that a lot of people can be underemployed. If you worked 10 hours last week, you're counted as employed,
yes.
But that's not the employment you want. Mm-hmm. So if you and I don't know if we know what the underemployment figure is for the eight county area.
Well, we don't for this area. Nationally, if you look at the number and include all of these people who are considered marginally unemployed, the national figure, which is at about 6.7% in November, pops up to over 12% when you include those additional people.
So if you got nationally unemployed and underemployed, a total of 12%.
Yes.
So it could be the same locally.
Relatively speaking, yeah. It could be a very similar kind mm-hmm. of thing. Again, it may not be quite as bad here. We're in somewhat better shape. But I think we do need to recognize that 2009 is kind of a different ballgame here. We're seeing national adjustments that are going to filter down in a big way potentially to the Columbus economy. For example, we've seen a number of closures of retail institutions, just plain out and out failures, mm-hmm. or throttling back significantly on the number of outlets. Well, realize that affects not only local retailing, but it's also going to impact things like transportation, warehousing operations, wholesaling, you know, those kinds of things, which made sense when we had retail activity very strong in the United States. As we now see these cutting back significantly, those operations here in Columbus may not be necessary any longer, at least some of them.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about our local economy here with four local economic experts. Jim Newton is economic advisor, chief economic advisor for Commerce National Bank. Joe Mandeville, assistant vice president for the Red Capital Group. George Machen, vice president, senior economist, Huntington Bank Shares Incorporated. Bill Lafayette, vice president for economic analysis for the Columbus Chamber of Commerce. We're at 614-292-8513. Bill, just want to say parenthetically that all four of you will be tomorrow, is that right, at the Columbus
Metropolitan
Club?
Tomorrow at noon at the Metropolitan Club.
And you can call the Columbus Metropolitan Club or go to columbusmetroclub.org on the web and find out details about how you can enjoy and question all of our panelists tomorrow. And we're at 614-292-8513 with Bill. Hello, Bill.
Good morning. I have a question. If I'm estimating revenues for the city, the county, or in particular the state of Ohio, what two or three economic indicators would I most be interested in?
Okay. Well,
the revenues for the city are based primarily on employment and wages. The revenues for the county are based primarily upon sales taxes. So sales tax drives county revenue growth. Employment drives city municipal revenue growth. And school districts primarily rely on property taxes. And the state relies on a combination of sales taxes and income taxes. So
okay,
you need
Bill.
To look at both.
Did I get it for you, Bill?
What I look at personal income nationally, what I look at unemployment rates, what are the most important economic indicators, not the tax sources?
I would look at employment. I would not look at unemployment. There are the unemployment changes in the unemployment rate can be ambiguous because they're driven both by the number of people looking for work and the number of people working. So I would take a look at the current employment statistics for the metro area that are released every month. I would look at what sectors within those statistics are growing and declining and get a sense of how of the relative pay of those different sectors.
Okay, Bill?
Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks for your call this morning. Bob is next. Hello, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to find out, like, this discussion seems to be as if we were talking about the economy on Pluto.
On Pluto. Okay.
Right, because there's no sense of personal involvement, personal responsibility, or anything else. It's just reporting in and analyzing.
What would you like to hear about
right.
that you're not hearing?
What I'd like to hear is, do the people, do your guests feel responsible for pushing a business first attitude onto the world, and in that way, promoting a situation that has come to pass that they're analyzing? For example, all of the public works programs that are being talked about as being shovel-ready, probably didn't get shovel-ready yesterday, all of them. Probably they've been waiting in line for years, but they've had no tax money to support fixing them.
Mm-hmm.
So now, business first seems to be getting in the way of doing all these things, and now we can do them because it's a desperate situation. So I'm thinking that if the economists were thinking about the Earth here instead of Pluto there. They might have to include their own policy decisions.
Well, I'm not sure what our caller means by a business first attitude. Perhaps he's referring to the ideology of the Bush administration in terms of privatization of services, in terms of a certain, I think most people would suggest, a neglect of our infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. What do you have to say?
Well, I'll start out.
Jim
Newton.
Okay.
I'm one of those non-apologists for markets. There's this impression somehow that the Bush administration represents free markets. The Bush administration represents fiscal discipline. The Bush administration represents, the way things would be in a laissez-faire type of system. That's nonsense. The Bush administration has just been an absolute disaster from the get-go in virtually everything they've done. They've not been fiscally responsible. They have, I think, made huge mistakes. We've seen the Federal Reserve make huge mistakes. If I have to pin the blame for what we find now on anybody, I would put it squarely on the government's back, particularly the Federal Reserve. I think they've done a horrible job of monetary policy actions over the past several years. It promoted the kind of excess, the kind of speculation that we saw, and unfortunately now we're paying for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, why do we have a decaying infrastructure here in our country? Why did we neglect this? Why do we have so many workers working at jobs that even if they work 40 to 50 hours is not enough to support a family? I mean, whose fault is that, if you can lay blame anywhere?
It's not a matter of fault. There has to come a point where we recognize that no economy, no matter how you structure it, whether it is market-driven or whether it is very heavily government-involved, there is no way to guarantee everybody some adequate standard of living. The question is, from some starting point, what kind of a system is going to give you the greatest opportunity to improve yourself? And I think with that kind of question, the answer is clearly markets. But with the understanding that the government in the United States has a responsibility. You know, we need the government as kind of a light finger on the pulse of the nation to make sure that we have a competitive environment. That's the idea behind all of those regulatory agencies we've developed. That's the idea behind antitrust activity. That was the idea behind an independent Federal Reserve, and virtually all of that has been lost.
All right. Who else would like to comment here?
At a local level, what we need to do, and what we are doing very much, is figuring out what are the sectors that make our economy tick. What are the sectors that bring in growth and jobs and income, and are in a position to rely on the assets that we have and the opportunities that this area offers. Sectors like transportation and distribution, business services, financial services, manufacturing, various forms of manufacturing, healthcare, and
so, Bill Lafayette, you're saying these sectors of business activity and employment activity, these are the ones that drive our local economy.
They're the ones that drive our local economy. They're the ones that we're focused on growing and ensuring that we've got a decent environment for.
Mm-hmm.
And so the ultimate beneficiary of that is our caller and everybody else in the region.
Jim Newton, you're shaking your head in apparent disagreement here.
Well, you might have heard my teeth grinding on that one. I do not believe that anybody, not a chamber of commerce, not a local government, not a state government, has the ability to foresee the future and try to determine what is good growth and what is bad growth. You know, I think this is one of those things that by and large should be up to the marketplace. It's why I am so completely and totally opposed to the idea of providing economic incentives for businesses to move into an area. We simply get into this competition among cities, among metro areas, to bid for businesses.
Tax breaks, et cetera.
Exactly. I think that is just horrible. And we're seeing in some respects a result of that. You know, as a country, we've seen lots of states and metro areas offer tax support for new auto plants, Toyota, Nissan, Honda, whatever, And what does it do? Well, it puts at a disadvantage competitively those that are already established, where they already have manufacturing operations producing cars, and they're not getting those kinds of breaks. Mm-hmm. The marketplace should do that, not government.
Does anybody disagree with Jim here? Is there a place for government offering tax breaks to a business and auto manufacturer or whatever to locate in the Columbus metro area, for example? Or do you all agree that this is bad policy?
In general.
George from Huntington.
Right. I think that low overall tax rates is probably the best policy in general. That way it minimizes these kinds of inefficiencies that I think that are being talked about here.
But George, you don't like Jim, you're saying you don't like the idea of saying to, let's say, Toyota, hey, you know, if you locate here, we'll give you the following tax breaks, et cetera, et cetera. You don't care for that.
I think that if we offer an overall positive economic environment that with essentially equal rules.
Equal rules, no specific breaks.
But low tax rates, a pro-business, low tax rate type environment, I think we would encourage continued improvements in Ohio. In fact, I think that we're kind of missing some important data that actually has come out in Ohio in the last year. The Ohio economy, just look going back to the payroll numbers, which I agree with Bill, that are good current real-time indicators of economic growth. Now, Ohio, during a recessionary year, did lose 0.5% in payrolls in that November to November period. November of last year to November of this year. But again, that's quite a bit better than the 1.35% drop in the country overall. So Ohio's economy actually outperformed, in all likelihood, the national economy last year.
In terms of taxation on business, you know, how does Ohio rank as a welcoming state? And how about Central Ohio?
Well, in my opinion, a lot of the tax reforms that were put in by the Taft administration appear to be having some positive impact in that regard. And also the Strickland administration has kept those. And there appears to be some, at least in terms of relative performance to the nation, you know, during a tough time, we did a bit better.
So we're not a high-tax state in terms of a business deciding to locate somewhere.
Well, you know, it's not saying that we have a broad-based economy. Ohio is a great diversified economy, and it has the high-tech aspects. And I think that we certainly can attract it, but we have to be mindful that we are competing in a very competitive world against a lot of states that are actually giving tax breaks and things. So I'm not saying to try to go follow that, but at least to give some low overall fair taxation. And that'll be equitable, and that'll promote efficiency the most.
Joe Vanderbilt, what would you add here?
Yeah, I think that one of the important differences there would be the difference between relocation of businesses versus startup businesses. And I think a lot of the economic development research over the past few years has kind of come to the conclusion that startups are a much better source of economic growth for a locale than are relocations from other areas. That gets back to what Jim was talking about, these tax incentives and tax breaks to try and lure a company to a certain location may not be the best strategy for overall economic growth. But George was saying with the low tax policies and kind of predictable low corporate tax rates would be a good thing for businesses, startups.
Did Marysville give Honda tax breaks initially to locate there? And if they did, didn't it pay off?
I don't know that Marysville did. The state of Ohio gave significant tax breaks, as I recall, to Honda.
Wasn't that a good idea? I mean, look, you have that tremendous
plan. It sounds good. And yes, obviously, that's true. But then you have to wonder over time, okay, what did that do to, say, some of the Chrysler or GM operations in other parts of the state?
Mm-hmm.
Can we feel so confident that when we go out and buy this economic development with taxpayer dollars, it's really paying off the way we think it should?
But how many jobs? I mean, Honda, in Marysville, my goodness, and all the feeder companies that feed them parts for their cars in Ohio, can't you say that's a net plus for the state of Ohio? And weren't those state of Ohio tax breaks a really good idea?
It seems like it, when you look at it in that respect. But then again, why don't we go out and buy all of the economic development we want? Why don't we just take all of our tax dollars and bribe companies to come into the state of Ohio? Just think of the number of jobs we'll create.
Well, there's a happy medium, isn't there, Jim?
There probably is, but then at some point in time, you're going to be competing with every other state, with every other metro area, and everybody is going to be after those same companies. And effectively, they're not going to give you any tax revenues eventually, because you're going to be giving it all away.
We're going to pause here for a couple of announcements. Back with our panel of economists here, talking about our local 8-county metro outlook for 2009 and the current state of affairs at WOSU 820, NPR News.
The next president is planning to boost the economy by building infrastructure, big infrastructure.
If these projects come in as we're seeing them come in, you're looking at an extra demand in the United States for around 250,000 barrels a day.
That'd be asphalt. I'm Kai Rizdahl, the road beneath your wheels, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
That story and all the day's business headlines tonight at 6 on Marketplace, now on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News and Classical Music.
WOSU News reports on the stories you need to hear and the stories you want to hear.
For some people, getting shoes repaired and healed is simply routine.
I love my shoes because they fit so well, so I always have them repaired.
But these days, many customers are keeping a closer eye on the economy.
It's smart now. It's just smart to retrench and save some money.
Get more from your news with the award-winning WOSU News team on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News, and Classical Music.
And good morning. I'm Amy Jarovich. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. Taking a look at the weather forecast, a winter weather advisory remains in effect until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Expect areas of freezing rain mixing with sleet at times. About a tenth of an inch of ice accumulation is possible. Beyond that, rain continues throughout the rest of the day as temperatures rise this afternoon to a high of 35. Currently 31 degrees. And now, back to Open Line with Fred Anderle.
Welcome back to Open Line at WOSU 820, NPR News. I'm Fred Anderle. An economic forecast for 2009 for the 8-county Columbus metro area from my guest, Joe Mandeville, Assistant Vice President of the Red Capital Group, Jim Newton, Chief Economic Advisor for Commerce National Bank, Bill Lafayette, Vice President for Economic Analysis for the Columbus Chamber of Commerce, George Machen, Vice President and Senior Economist, Huntington Bank Shares, all of my guests tomorrow at the Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum with the Blue Chip Economic Forecast. And that is tomorrow, the 7th, at noon at the Athletic Club of Columbus. For information on attending, you can call the Columbus Metropolitan Club at 464-3220, 464-3220, or you can go online at columbusmetroclub.org. And you can call in right now at 614-292-8513. Brief email comments at openline at wosu.org. Brian is here. Hi, Brian.
Hi, good morning. Just got a question that kind of goes along with what the gentleman has been talking about. Have studies been conducted to show the economic effects of spending in certain sectors? For example, is $1 million spent on automobiles have a better economic effect than spending, let's say, $1 million on consumer goods or government infrastructure, charity, you know, investing in the stock market? I'd be interested in hearing their comments.
Okay.
Well, there are economic impact multipliers that you can get from a number of sources. And it does show that, by and large, a dollar of higher demand in some sectors will lead to a larger impact on the economy as a whole. By and large, manufacturing tends to be relatively high. Retail would be relatively low because it's simply redistributing the dollars that are already here.
Caller, follow up.
Just curiously. So, obviously, you know, spending is good, and spending, you know, at this stage on things like, you know, automobiles or new homes or even, you know, building highways and things like that are ultimately a good thing. But they can be listed as far as being better or more desirable or least desirable. And how does the government, you know, as they're calculating all this, you know, what they want to do, who they want to help? Are these conscious decisions, or are we just kind of are we not really taking good aim at these things?
I would tend to think that we're probably not taking particularly good aim with all of these kinds of studies. The thing to realize is that they're very static in nature. They are looking at past data, kind of in some way, shape, or form, extrapolating that into the future, whether it's through input-output analysis, time series analysis. You know, if you have a changing economy, if that changing economy is local, state, national, or international, you know, those kinds of what we call Keynesian multipliers are going to be potentially shifting a great deal. You know, the government can certainly estimate with this thing called a Keynesian multiplier, something called the marginal propensity to consume, which is basically out of a change in income, what percent goes toward additional consumer spending. You know, theoretically, that's what's going to determine how much of a pop we're going to get. But it's a very difficult thing to do, and again, the estimates are based on past data, and so in an economy that's changing as substantially as the one that we have now, I'm not sure they're going to give us a particularly accurate picture.
Mm-hmm. Brian, thanks for your call. Joe?
Yeah, I just had one more comment about that. The other thing with these multipliers is that they're really calibrated to estimate changes in final demand and what effect that would have. So it would be if all this money were spent on purchasing cars rather than going to, you know, GM and Chrysler in terms of, you know, offsetting debt. So the multipliers aren't necessarily calibrated to be used for government bailout money, if you want to use that term.
You know, as we say, we have Columbus closing 12 recreation centers, cutting back in neighborhood health center services, thinking about putting before the voters an income tax increase for the city. In your forecast for 2009, in terms of – and they're doing this because, as you're saying, not sufficient revenue is coming into the city to you know, float all these things like the neighborhood health care center services, the recreation center operations, et cetera. What does your 2009 forecast show in terms of some kind of improvement, some kind of idea that we could get back to a state of financial affairs in Columbus where we could open up those recreation centers, give full services at neighborhood health care centers, et cetera?
Well, based on our forecast, it seems that 2009 will not be the year that that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime in the more distant future.
More distant future. Are you able to make a projection as to when that might occur, or is it unknown?
I could give you a guess. Any of us could give you a guess. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Is it an educated guess or merely a guess?
A marginally educated guess.
And what would that marginally educated guess be, Bill Lafayette?
Well, I'm thinking, and others may disagree, but I'm thinking that we won't have nearly as long a wait this time until employment starts growing again as we did after the 2001 recession. That was 21 months. We'll have less of a wait this time, I think, because productivity is higher. And because we've actually had a full year of national level employment decline without a full year of GDP decline. And so we won't have to wait 21 months this time.
So to get back to where we were, the health of the financial health of the city, that we could afford these services?
Who knows? 2011, let's say that.
Let's say 2011.
By the bicentennial.
Yeah. But it's going to be a long haul here,
any
way you look at it. And Paul Krugman said in his New York Times, the Nobel Prize-winning economist said in his New York Times column, depending on what action the Obama administration takes or doesn't take, we could be on the verge of, in his words, Great Depression number two.
I think that's a bit of an overstatement, but then you expect that from a columnist, I guess.
You expect that from a Nobel Prize-winning columnist, Jim. How many Nobel Prize winners?
The Nobel Prize came from earlier works, not the New York Times column. It's good entertainment to be an extreme pessimist.
You place Paul Krugman in the category of an entertainer rather than
sometimes yes, although not necessarily all that entertaining. I think that suggesting this is going to be depression number two is overstating the case just a bit. I don't consider myself an optimist by any stretch of the imagination. I do think, though, that we're in for a very long slog here in terms of the economy. We're not going to recover well. You know, we have a lot of things going on. We're looking at tax breaks from the Obama administration that are going to be, it seems, done via withholding. We're going to see significant spending increases. But all of this is coming at a time when in 2 years' time, which is why I'm not sure about this 2011 date, we basically hit the reset button and all of those Bush tax cuts go away, every single one of them for everybody.
Yeah.
And so that's on the horizon. We have the demographic time bombs on the near-term horizon, Social Security and Medicare. You know, we are borrowing huge amounts of money, in part from ourselves, more from others abroad. All of this is going to come due at some point in time, and I think it is going to substantially keep down the kind of growth we can expect in the future, but not a depression.
So, yes, George.
I think that there are some positive things, however, that have been going on and that we should take account of. The housing correction actually started in 2006. So it's already proceeded for quite a while. The prices have been coming down quickly. Now, obviously, those do represent wealth losses, but they also mean a quicker return to affordability, and that's important for the bottoming process. And even while that process of prices declining may continue in some of the booming markets, I would expect that many parts of the country would see a bottom this year. So that would be a positive. And that, you know, may be a matter of perspective, geographical perspective. If one is sitting in Florida, the world is coming to an end. If one is sitting in Ohio, I don't think that's the case. Also, I think that what is a little bit off of the radar screen is the drop in inflation. Commodity prices, energy prices, that's been a huge drop. And that actually has raised real inflation-adjusted wages for the most in decades. It is higher now. The average weekly earnings, even adjusted for lower hours, way above what it was in the 1990s, and now we're starting to go back to earlier decades.
Because of an increase in purchasing power.
Increase in purchasing power.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that at least is going to help. It's going to help consumers to spend a little more, to save a little more, to pay off a little more debt. So definitely some positives there. What the Federal Reserve has now done to get the economy going has been dramatic, and I think that we'll also see their credit markets show a gradual improvement also. Now, there's always a risk of a larger crisis, but in general, if we can avoid a large credit-type event again, I think that we will have a form of bottom and start a recovery sometime in 2009.
Mm-hmm. When you say a large credit type event, you're talking about the mortgage-backed securities, et cetera, that kind of event. Huh?
Well, some of the events such as, you know, for example, the Lehman Brothers collapse, the AIG collapse, those were all very severe shocks in the fourth mm-hmm. quarter that essentially it basically froze not only credit activity but economic activity. And I think that as a result, the actual numbers that are coming in the fourth quarter may be a bit sharper than reflected by the reality of the situation once we work through the crises.
Is it hard for a qualified consumer now in the metro area here to go out and get a loan for a car or for a home? I mean, harder than it was a few years ago?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Credit availability is somewhat tighter. Banks are and other financial institutions much less likely to lend than what they were in the past. But then that's a good thing. You know, we're getting some of that discipline back to make sure that we're not providing loans mm-hmm. to people who are not fully qualified. But then the problem with that is, even some of those who are qualified, both people and businesses, are finding themselves locked out. Some of the activity that they would be engaging in, they can't because they can't get the funding they need, which means economic activity slows down even more still.
Jim, if I were a financially qualified individual or a business, small business, let's say, here in Central Ohio, and I go to a bank and I say, I want a loan here for, you know, my expansion of my business, and I'm credible, you know, why would a bank under current circumstances say we're not likely to give you the loan anyway, even though you are credible?
Well, even if you are credible, you know, we are entering into an economy which is sliding backwards. It's not just slowing down. We're in recession. And so the growth that would be needed within the economy to support that added business activity that you're wanting to fund may not be present, and therefore, mm-hmm. from that bank's point of view, it becomes a relatively unwise loan.
So the bank is saying, look, you think your business, Fred, is going to expand, but based on our analysis of the current economic conditions, we think you're wrong. You're not going to have those additional sales, so we're not going to give you the loan. Right?
Yes, and at the same time, it's kind of a quandary here for financial institutions. You know, they're being hammered for being too lenient in the past, for not looking at the creditworthiness of borrowers. Now that they're doing that more thoroughly and not giving out as many loans suddenly, particularly since all this bailout money came down the pike, you're not being responsible to the American society.
Mm-hmm. So they get it either way.
They really can't win here.
Yeah. All right. Let us go back to our callers here with Jim. Hello, Jim.
I'm calling because I'm concerned that perhaps, you've heard the term, has California go slowly the nation. They're going to have a major cutback in higher education budgeting next year. They're talking about reducing the number of students by 10,000 in the University of California system. And I'm wondering if the same type of thing might be happening in Ohio with increased strain on the state budget. And as this goes, I mean, Ohio especially is facing not having as many college-educated workers as the rest of the nation. Is this something we have to worry about? It's something I haven't heard about anything as far as economics or bailout, but it's something I'm wondering about on the horizon.
Okay, who'd like to speak to that? George Mulkin of Huntington.
Looking at the California economy really deteriorated very sharply over the last year. And for much of the year, the unemployment rate in California has been higher than in Ohio. And that still may be the case. I need to check on that. But in general, there has been a real economic collapse in some of these housing boom-type states in the Southwest and in some areas in the East. And I think that that's really weighing those budgets down probably more significantly than here. Again, I previously talked about a statistic where, you know, the Ohio payroll employment is down, but it's not down nearly as much as the national average. So there could be some very big differences in the fiscal positions between different states.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the Ohio economy is in the Ohio budget is in significant trouble, as we've all seen in the headlines, and that is going to impact higher education across the state, and it's certainly going to impact the 63,000 state jobs we have here in the region.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Governor Strickland says if he doesn't get we're talking about billions of dollars of aid from the federal government, a potential 25% cut across the board in expenditures. That sounds like that would certainly affect higher education. Right?
It'll affect everything.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I imagine the Obama administration incoming is going to be forthcoming with this aid to the states, right?
Well, with some of it, but then keep in mind the number I saw is that they, you know, in total, the states say they want $1 trillion worth of additional spending. Well, wouldn't we all love additional $1 trillion of spending directed our way? They may get some of that from the Obama administration, but to think somehow the federal government has the ability to buy us out of recession, buy us out mm-hmm. of our budgetary problems is, I think, naive.
So we could be facing some real cutbacks to higher education and other services in
Ohio. Terms of higher education and with the Strickland administration, presumably fairly quickly here, coming out with its proposal for primary secondary education. I think education budgets around the state are going to be under some pressure. Not, mm-hmm. however, as George said, like what we're seeing in California.
In California, yeah. Email here from a listener who says the economy is driven by wages, which drives demand. In the last 30 years, wages have not kept up, says a listener, with productivity gains. That's why American consumers have taken on so much debt to stay afloat. The structural solution for the economy to rebound is to increase wages of the middle and working classes, says our emailer. Cutting wages in response to the recession is a recipe for America to be on the race to the bottom. Does the panel agree or disagree? What policies would most effectively raise wages for American workers?
Sounds awful nice, doesn't it? All we have to do is somehow raise everybody's wages. Now, I teach as a part-time at Ohio State University, so maybe what we ought to do is take some of that $1 trillion and direct it to my salary. I will do my best to do my spending duties. You know, it's nice to think that could be done easily, but in the final analysis, you know, wages represent a cost of doing business to any enterprise, and that ultimately has to be passed along to the consumer. And so as we say something like that, we have to recognize it has significant repercussions. If you want real wages to go up, you're going to have to be willing to pay more at the supermarket, at the Kmart, at the Walmart, at the Macy's, whatever, which means then out of those same number of dollars you're now receiving or slightly more dollars, they're not going to go as far because you're going to have to pay more to cover the cost associated with those wages. Mm-hmm. It's this horrible, nasty cycle, and what we're finding now, I think, is that everybody, businesses and people alike, are deleveraging. They're trying to claw their way out of these heavy debt positions, and what we're seeing now, sadly, is a natural response to the unnatural spending that we saw earlier on in the 2000s.
Joe Mandeville, I saw you nodding your head in agreement here.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what Jim was saying. I think it's very difficult to tackle an issue like rising wages when you start to get into the actual nuts and bolts of it. I mean, if you start to legislate high wages, you run the risk of causing further declines in employment. There's only so much money out there in terms of demand. Now, I understand the concept of rising wages will lead to rising demand, kind of that Keynesian model that Jim was talking about. But there are limits to the Keynesian model, and I think this is one of them.
Okay. Can I just add one thing?
Lower
inflation is going to – the issue is real wages, how much you can buy with those wages. And because of the drop in inflation and drop in commodity prices, real wages now are the highest they've been in decades.
All right. Let's reintroduce our panelists here just for a moment. George Mukshin, Vice President and Senior Economist, Huntington Bank Shares, Inc. Bill Lafayette, Vice President for Economic Analysis for the Columbus Chamber of Commerce. Jim Newton, Chief Economic Advisor for Commerce National Bank. Joe Mandeville, Assistant Vice President for the Red Capital Group. And our next caller here is Ken. Hello, Ken.
Oh, yes. I was wondering, the governor has been saying that over the next 2 years, Ohio could be short about $15 billion. And on the money that's going to go to the states, my understanding is Governor Strickland would like that money to go for paying down Ohio's debt, which may not be the case. The money may go for infrastructure needs, creating jobs, this type of thing. It may not go where he can pay down the debt. If that's the case, how much more can he cut? And when did he start raising taxes? And Ohio already has, by many people, feel that Ohio already has a high tax rate. And where does that put the people of Ohio?
Mm-hmm.
That's my question.
I think the governor and the legislature have committed themselves to continue to reduce, for example, income tax rates, haven't they?
Yes,
they
have. Yes.
Yeah. But cuts, I guess we could see some pretty deep cuts, huh?
We probably will, but the spending on infrastructure has the effect of increasing employment, giving us the investment that we need in roads and airports and the facilities that help us do business more effectively. So in the long run, it should have a positive impact on the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but that may take time. And here the Ohio's already in a $15 billion over 2 years deficit. Like New York has a $1.5 billion. I mean it's such a wide gap, and that's going to take time. And does Ohio have time?
Well, you know, we have a constitutional requirement that on a biennial basis we have a balanced budget. So in one way or another, we have to come out whole seemingly in terms of spending and taxes. With regard to Bill's point of in the long run, the infrastructure spending is a good thing. Well, yes, and then again, no. The government is going into significant debt. The U.S. government is going into significant debt as a result of funding these kinds of activities that eventually is going to have to be paid back to whoever buys that treasury debt. And so in some respects, you know, the long-run implications are not necessarily nearly so good as just what the infrastructure itself would suggest.
Okay. Let us go back. By the way, Bob, let's go to Bob, as a matter of fact. Hello, Bob. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was calling to ask about the preferences that your panelists have expressed, particularly regarding markets and the feeling of suspicion about the value of the government in doing anything about wages for ordinary people. The reason that I'm asking is that I can't remember a time when, for instance, small business representative said, you know, let's raise the rates for the low-skilled workers. Let's raise the base wage. I have never heard that. Now, I've heard when times are good, well, that's not good. And then when I've heard when times are bad, well, that's not good. Well, I feel like I'm hearing the same thing now, because the conditions that created the loss of employment wages and the loss of employment, too, were substantially created, it appears to me, by government and business together. It looks like somebody paid somebody else to get preferences. Now, the reason that I'm raising this in particular is that, first of all, the people who don't think there is a problem are the people with jobs. If you have a job, of course, it seems just fine. But suppose you don't, and suppose you work your fanny off, and you don't get ahead for, say, 30 years. Now, the horrible Mr. Krugman has documented this along with some other people, Reich, quite well. And yet we just keep sailing along with people like Ronald Reagan saying how great it is to deregulate and how great the markets are, when in fact, what are the markets doing for ordinary people besides lowering prices so that they can purchase and raising the profits to the businesses who sell those things to them? Well, oh, by the way, if you keep being driven down the wage scale, pretty soon you're going to reach where what we have now, where Walmart is the company, the retailer, the only one I know of, that is actually profiting.
And whose stock price is rising, yes. Since
When Bush talks about how great things are, yeah, for his group, it has been fine. Look at all the money they've made for the stockholders and for themselves, for the managers. But the workers have not been benefited. If the workers are not benefited, the ordinary person, what is the value of government?
All right. Let's go around the panel and get some opinions here. George Mokshin of Huntington, you look like you're thinking about this carefully.
Well, I think that Ohio in general has had a very tough decade. There's no doubt about that. There was a lot of manufacturing jobs lost. There was a lot of restructuring. I think workers did take the hard brunt of that. It's kind of unfortunate that the economic expansion didn't go longer, because I think that we had basically moved out of that restructuring phase. We were starting to benefit a lot from exports. We're starting to benefit from just in general a lot of areas of our economy have become much more efficient. And I think that had we not had this downturn now, I think we'd be talking much more differently about these kind of issues.
But what is the role of government here, specifically the federal government, in ensuring, for example, decent wages for workers? I mean, how far do you let the market operate, and when does government ideally step in? I mean, minimum wage, for example, some people would say is tracking far behind what it ought to be. Should the government legislate a much higher minimum wage? Is that something that's going to be negative in terms of our productivity, or what?
I do think there's an argument for when there are large restructurings, for example, people losing their jobs beyond their control, that they get aid in terms of learning new skills, of helping to adjust to new conditions, to get to those jobs wherever they are in whatever industry they are. And maybe that is something that we could have done better as a country, I think, in recent years. Mm-hmm. And perhaps had we done a better job, a lot of the people that are struggling now wouldn't be struggling by as much.
Mm-hmm. Bill Lafayette, you'd like to add something?
Let's take manufacturing as an example. Over the past few years, manufacturing employment fell something like 15-16%. Manufacturing output rose 11%. So this restructuring is creating new opportunities, different kinds of jobs than existed before. And so that's why training is so critically important for improving the well-being of workers.
Training supported by the federal government, tax dollars?
The federal government, the state government, the local mm-hmm. government.
Mm-hmm. And 30 seconds for Jim Newton here.
In the final analysis, I think the role of government, the best it can do is simply provide the atmosphere within which growth can occur. It cannot guarantee growth. It cannot guarantee good standards of living. Neither can the marketplace. You know, it's this necessary role of government to give us the opportunity to do that. But in the final analysis, nobody can guarantee
it. And the government has a role in it. Wise regulation here, does it not?
Hopefully so.
Okay. Thank you all for coming. Jim Newton, Bill Lafayette, Joe Mandeville, George Mokshin, all tomorrow at the Columbus Metropolitan Club. Call 464-3220 for information. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
When we come back, challenges for U.S. foreign and security policy. John Mueller, our professor of political science from OSU here at listener-supported WOSU, WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.